Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. Dealing with Paul, who's one of the most misunderstood people in the Bible. I don't know why that is necessarily. Maybe it's because he was a lawyer. Lawyers still to this day are not well understood. It could be a number of reasons, but anyway, there's a lot written in there. Paul was warned about by Peter. He says he's going to be talking to you of things that are hard to understand. And so evidently Peter understood Paul enough to know that Paul had a particular mission that was going to be difficult for people to understand. And he was setting Paul out on that and agreeing that what Paul's message was true. Paul's message was the same as Christ, and Christ's message was the same as Moses. And Moses' message was the same as Abraham, and Abraham's message was the same as Enoch. And why? Because this was the same God that they were serving. The God of Abraham, the God of Moses, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. They're all the same. There's only one God. And although there are gods many, there is only one God creator. And his nature is repeated over and over again from age upon age. And the kingdom of God is from generation to generation. And all the generations that understand God understand God. And they're going to be preaching the same thing. What's amazing, and I studied the Bible a lot when I was younger. I studied it in the seminary, and I studied it with some of the finest scholars you could hope to find. And I am just absolutely amazed how we missed it. We missed some of the simple, basic truths that are right there in the Bible. And because of that, the world's in a terrible state. People are being forced to do things that they don't want to do. I mean, homeschoolers are fleeing countries like, or supposedly educated countries like Germany, because it's against the law to school your kids at home in Germany. There's forced medicines on people. I have an article right here, assisted suicide is skyrocketing in the state where I live. It's legal now to kill your parents. You know, if you get them in a moment of depression where they say, oh, I want to die, you can kill them. Hey, that's okay. It's just legal. Our minds are shifted, and we think we're changing our minds and we're looking at things more educated, but the reality is our minds are being changed. You know, like the story we've mentioned several times on this broadcast of the 100 monkeys, where the monkeys all did things a certain way, but one monkey started doing them different, and then after a while, a long while, some other monkey began to emulate that, and then it spread, and then all of a sudden, all the monkeys on an island were doing the same thing, washing this particular fruit in the seawater in order to take out the bitterness. The amazing thing is that monkeys, identical kind of monkeys, but on another island, long ways away, that could not see what was going on this island, began to do the same thing, washing the fruit, that to get the bitterness out. How did they know? It was that once all these monkeys got the message, all the other monkeys got it too. Same thing, we can tell you other stories about other animals, herd animals, that suddenly they, enough of them get the message or realize that a situation has changed, and they all change. And this actually, schools of fish do this all the time in the ocean. I can just give you example after example after example of this in nature. The reality is that you're doing the same thing. If you see something, we call it mass hysteria, is an obvious place where all of a sudden this mass hysteria starts spreading throughout a community and everybody gets it. Next thing you know, you're burning witches and what have you. But the reality is that as you operate in this way, where you're responding to this mass hysteria. You're no longer really in control of your thoughts. And there's a lot of subtle twisting of our thinking by those around us, by society around us. And what's happened is 2,000 years ago, people were being seduced into a way of life that was altering the face of the earth. Rome had rose to this tremendous power a couple hundred years before, and were influencing nation after nation with their tremendous success and their fabulous wealth, unbelievable wealth. And their influence was going everywhere. But they themselves was becoming corrupted as they spread their message of affluence to other people. They themselves were slipping away from the very secret that made them so successful. They thought it was other things that made them successful. You know, like people think today, the Constitution makes this nation a great nation. And the Constitution is an interesting document, but that's not what made America great. Most of the people opposed the Constitution when it was originally written. They were against it. It would not have been voted into place by the people had it been put to the people for a vote. Very clear, historians agree on that. But yet today, a lot of people think, oh, the Constitution is the answer. No, the Constitution is not the answer. It is not your. It is becoming a sacred cow in the minds of a lot of patriots, but it really isn't the solution. You go back to the Constitution, you will change really nothing. Because something else is regulating society. Something else is making you subject. You know, people think, oh, we change the tax laws, things will get better. Change the money system, things will get better. Change statutes and laws governing this, that, or the other thing. You know, what your health laws, what you can consider to be practices of medicine. And now, some of those changes might affect changes in society, but what is the cart that's pulling the horse? And I said that backwards on purpose. What is the horse that's pulling the cart? What is the driving force in society? And the reality is, when you refuse to see a basic truth, and there are basic truths in the universe, and we describe them, and that's where the flaw comes in, is the way in which we describe them, because we reduce these basic truths down to language, and language is very finite. So, but there are basic truths, basic laws of nature that work just about everywhere in at least one veil of the universe, in one membrane of the universe. And those of you who looked at some of our, or listened to some of our shows on the quantum theory and string theory and all that stuff, which are still available on online. You can find them on at preparingyou.com. Anyway, the fact is that there are these laws, and if you close your mind to certain aspects of those laws of nature and nature's God, and violate them, and go do contrary to them, certain things will start to happen. First thing that will start to happen is scales will come over your eyes, and you will no longer be able to see that that's a bad idea to violate that law. It's like taking a railing away from a steep staircase. You know, you're now in danger of falling. The railing is gone. So, what does this actually have to do with the show today? Because the show today is going to be part of probably a two-part series that's going to be the culmination of this series on the Epistle of Paul to the Romans, to try to bring it all into perspective. And it is an iconoclastic series, and it's free if you want to go see it online, but it's not all up yet and won't be all up for another 9 days. Because it's been part of broadcasts that we've made on other stations, and some of them we can't release them right away. They're exclusive of the station for a little while, but eventually they will all be released. And it will take you on a journey through the mind of Paul and through what the early church was doing, especially the early church in Rome, and some of the people that were involved in this. And then you can equate it to your own life, in your own world, in your own governments. Because today, countries like the United States are really under Roman civil law. Roman law, Roman civil law, and civil law are the same systems of jurisprudence. That's a maxim of law. And so understanding what was going on in history is very important, because history does repeat itself. And just as Rome fell, societies today will fall and collapse, mostly for the same reasons. Anyway, in John 14:7, it says, "If ye had known me, you should have known my Father also, and from henceforth you know him and have seen him." In other words, if you see me, you've seen the Father, which he says in another place. In John 5:46, which was earlier, he says, "For had ye believed Moses, you would have believed me, for he wrote of me." When Jesus was saying this to the Pharisees, they thought they believed Moses. And as we've said in earlier shows and explaining in this whole series, is that Moses and Jesus were in agreement. And Moses was also in agreement with some of the Jews, or some of the Jews at that time were in agreement with Moses. But the majority, and what we see as Jews, which was mostly the Pharisees is what we were dealing with, Sadducees also, but they, Pharisees and Sadducees didn't see things the same. Zealots, there might be some Pharisees that were counted amongst the Zealots because they were even more extreme, but there was a wide variety of what they believed they were reading when they read the Torah. Because the Essenes had a completely different view, and even amongst the Essenes had different views, although the Essenes were somewhat more consistent among themselves and quite a bit different than the Pharisees. Who really believed in Moses? Now, all of them had a vision of Moses. It's kind of like truth or consequences. You know, you've got this guy who has a belief that this is Moses. And he says, you know, it's in, what, how's the game go, where the three guys come out and they all say, "I'm Moses," and "I am Moses," and "I am Moses." And then they begin to tell you about themselves, and you ask them questions, and you're trying to find out who is the real Moses. You know, will the real Moses please stand up? Because each of these groups, and there were many more, had a different view of what Moses was saying, yet they all read the same book. And in our book, Thy Kingdom Come, we show you just a glimpse of why there was so much confusion. And modern Christians today, the only thing they know about Moses, they know based on what the Pharisees believed he was doing. And so that's why they come up with the idea that Moses was doing something different than what Christ was, and Christ is doing something different than Moses. And Moses did this, and it was a shadow, and then Christ did this, and it wasn't a shadow. Well, no, they were both doing the same thing. There was a shadow involved with both, too. And those shadows are the rituals and ceremonies. You know, like baptism. Baptism was a ritual in the days of Moses, and it was a ritual at the time of Christ. Herod was baptizing, and John the Baptist was baptizing, and the apostles baptized. All same rituals. Everybody goes out, gets dunked in water. Now, supposedly you got baptized in the name of Moses and God over here with Herod by his authority, and over here you could get baptized by the authority of John the Baptist, and then eventually by the authority of Christ, and that was that. But everybody was getting dunked in water. I mean, Constantine was having everybody get baptized in Milan. And they're what I call instant Christians. You just add water and they're baptized, you know. But John said, repent and get baptized. Turn around and get baptized. Turn around from what? Evidently, they were doing something that Moses said not to do, or was doing things that Moses didn't say to do. Their society had taken a turn because they didn't see something that both Moses and Jesus Christ said. Both Moses and Jesus Christ said, love thy neighbor as thyself. We throw those words out, and what does it mean? Does it mean to force your neighbor to do things that you want them to do? Is that love? To take from your neighbor because you want something and you need the money, and so you take from your neighbor? I mean, that would be called stealing normally, but if you all get together and you say, let's have one purse, which we've read about in Proverbs 1 and 10, this idea of having one purse. And then somebody has the authority to take from everybody equally. That's not really stealing, because you've all agreed to it. You've made a covenant. You made a contract. You somehow or other, you've consented to giving somebody the power to take from other members of your society for your welfare. And of course, Paul says that what should have been for your welfare, quoting David in the Old Testament, what should have been for your welfare has become a snare. And how does it become a snare? Is you give somebody the power to take from your neighbor. At the same time, you have to consent to being one purse where he can also take from you. And so anyway, we begin by defining society, because the Bible is telling us about the government of the people, for the people, and by the people, according to Wycliffe, which is where Lincoln got that phrase from, the Wycliffe Bible. Society, defined at least by Bouvier's Law Dictionary in 1874, says a society is a number of persons united together by mutual consent in order to deliberate, determine, and act jointly for some common purpose. Mutual consent is a key element of a society. But is that, how is that mutual consent brought about? This first definition of the word society talks about being united in a common purpose by consent. That consent may be ongoing, in which each individual must daily decide to participate in that common purpose. The other form of consent would include some concept of integration, where at a point in time, through pledge, social compact, or contract, some allegiance and obligation is acquired. From that point, the individual is compelled to participate and comply according to some formulation of rules, ordinances, or traditions, which become law by contract. In a republic, you might have a Congress, but that Congress is titular. It does not have any authority over you. It can't make laws. It's not lawmakers. It's a Congress to represent you. Today, actually, I've heard right out of the mouth of politicians, candidates for presidency of the United States, that it is not the job of Congress or the Senate to do the will of the people. But once in power, they are to decide on behalf of the people. They are lawmakers. That's because you have moved from a republic to a democracy, and you've done it a long time ago. And if you ever read the American Creed, it says, I believe in the United States government, a democracy in a republic, and you are all members of that democracy. And the reason why I mention that is because in follow-up programs, you'll hear people talking about, you know, like being forced to take vaccinations. How do you stop them from forcing you to take vaccinations? There's a lot of little tricks to do it. But there, and waiving, you know, certain rights and all this kind of stuff, you can do it. And what happens, though, is that they can still reserve the right to force you to take those vaccinations, because you consented a long time ago to the authorities that you are under. You see, we imagine today, because everyone has gone this way, that you cannot have government without someone being in charge, someone, some central authority exercising power one over the other. Yet that's exactly what Christ was doing with the church, is he was creating an alternative society in the midst of the Roman Empire, whereby people broke the bonds righteously that had connected them to the society of Rome, which had become totalitarian. Because Rome wasn't always totalitarian. They didn't even have an emperor hardly until just a little bit before Christ was born. And they had been around for 500 to 700 years. They had thrown out the Tarquinian kings 500 years before, and they had become a republic. But by the time Christ was born, they had moved from being a republic to an indirect democracy to being an empire. And with men like Herod, he was doing, following in this same pattern of thought and behavior that we see manifested in Rome, which was moving towards this corrupted state of rule over the people instead of rule by the people. And we don't even understand rule by the people. Rule by the people is everybody takes the individual responsibilities and gathers together in free will offerings to help one another and take care of one another. They hear the hue and cry of one another, and they become a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Not a government that elects somebody else to rule over it. We can't even imagine such a government as possible, yet it is the most predominant form of government throughout the history of the world. And there are thousands of examples of successful governments that are operated just in that way, but you wouldn't know about them having attended public school. Because they'll tell you that there was a government here and there was a government there, but they don't really tell you how they worked and how they operated. And it has gone out of our collective consciousness, so we no longer know what that society would look like. Another definition of society is an association or company of persons, slightly different than the other one. Not a number of persons, but an actual association or a company of persons. Generally not incorporated, united together for any mutual common purpose. Now, an association and company of people, like for instance, if you were an unincorporated association by today's law, you would be considered and treated as if you were incorporated, yet you would not be incorporated. So this definition in Black's, Henry Campbell's dictionary in 1891, a little bit later, is now making society as if it is some sort of company or connection. While the first definition in Bouvier's was just a number of persons united together by mutual consent in order to deliberate and determine and act jointly. They choose to on a day-to-day basis. No contract, no social contract. Except an unwritten social contract that you're going to get along and that you have some sort of foundational law. And of course, that's what Israel was. They had a foundational law, which was the Ten Commandments, and almost nobody understands the statutes of Moses, which were just a way in which to explain how those Ten Commandments would be applied in day-to-day life. They weren't laws like we think of them, although they became that way through systems set up by men like the Pharisees as they changed the way in which people saw the Old Testament, the Torah. Some, there was still a remnant, quite a large remnant, a very popular remnant, that didn't want to go that way. And these were the ones who became the early Christians for the most part. But they were doing something else. But then we have another word, community. A community is a social or religious, occupational, or other group sharing common characteristics or interests and perceived or perceiving itself as distinct. Now, this is a body. A community is a body, separate, in some respect, from the larger society within which it exists. Now, just to give you a brief, and we won't be able to go all the way into it in this program, but we're going to be referring back to this probably in one or two more of these shows until we have the entire series as one, and then we'll make it available for free. Most of it's for free already. The early church were those that were called out to be the disciples of Christ, the students of Christ, who eventually become the ambassadors and ministers of the church, which also consisted of the laity. Together, both of them created a society, an unincorporated society, not based on association, but based upon mutual consent, free will offerings, free will cooperation. Every home, they were kings and priests within that home. There were still these ministers who were actually part of a community, a social or religious, occupational, or other group sharing common characteristics. That's what the ministers of the church were. The ordained ministers of the church will use that word ordained. There's three or four different words in the New Testament translated ordained. They don't all mean the same. But just for the sake of our language today, and we go into more explanation. The appointed church, when Jesus said to the little flock, that little flock was a community within this larger society that had a particular mission and role, that owned all things in common for the particular purpose of feeding the sheep, the service of the larger society of free souls under God. You see, when you got the baptism of Christ, you were kicked out of all these other systems, and now you're operating separately. They couldn't force you to do things that they could force others to do. Today, you're forced to wear seat belts. You're forced to buy health care. That's the newest thing coming up. Why? Because they end up being responsible for your health because you're a beneficiary of their system. You're also the resources that provide for that system, but this is exactly the way the early church was set up, except they didn't have the force. They didn't exercise authority. And this is why Christ says you weren't to be like the other governments of the Gentiles who exercise authority. He had given them a completely new idea in way in which to relate together as a society and community in the world, but not of the world. This changed their thinking. People didn't even understand what Christians were for the most part. They couldn't figure it out. Their brains wouldn't go there. But I'm going to go there, and I'm going to take you there when we after the break and show you how this was. Now, many of you will see little glimpses of truth, but you're going to have to actually start walking this walk. It takes a while for it to start sinking in. You're going to have to start chewing on it. That's why it takes 20 hours of audios to get to the epistle of Paul to the Romans, so that you can even just begin to understand it. And I have to repeat these things over and over again, show you how they're connected in every aspect of your life. Where you think you're losing control, you lost control already. You're just now realizing it's like falling off a building. You've been falling for some time. It's just when you smack that sidewalk, that falling becomes a reality. The fall didn't kill you. It was the stop that killed you. So anyway, we'll return to Keys of the Kingdom, and we'll talk about this after this brief word.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom, and we're talking about society and how society affects the individual and how the individual affects society. If you accept an idea that it's okay to force your neighbor to do anything that you think he ought to be able to do, then it suddenly becomes okay that society forces you to do what it thinks you ought to do. It thinks you ought to get a vaccination. You get a vaccination. It thinks you ought to get health care. You have to get health care. Because you thought it was okay that they were forced to pay into your public school education. You see, the problems that we're seeing now are the product of the seeds we planted 100 years ago in this nation. And now they've grown up. These weed ideas have grown up. So now, I'm coming along a generation or two or three later and saying, hey, there's something you missed. There's something you didn't see. You need to operate a different way. And so, I'm the monkey out there in the cold Pacific water, washing the bitter fruit that he picked off of the island and washing it in that salt water until the bitterness comes out. And then you eat a little bit, and then it gets down to the next layer, and you wash it a little bit more, and then the bitterness comes out, and then you get to eat it. Well, I'm going to just keep doing that. I just keep doing it and doing it. And finally, somebody else starts to do it too. And then somebody else. And then somebody else. And that's what we're doing. That's what we do through the Living Network, trying to get people to start doing it. The problem is you have to be willing to get out there and wash and get baptized in this other way of doing things, to immerse yourself in this other way of doing things. Not just in relationship to governments and communities and stuff, but to your family. Are you forcing, you know, I remember seeing husbands who just browbeat their wives into submission, and their wives become these little meek things. But yet, in the last show that I did on Paul, they were showing how Paul's just naming these women that he's actually counting amongst the apostles, deacons of the church. And what kind of women were these? And who was Claudia, who was actually the daughter of this king of Great Britain, who was this noble guy who stood up to everybody, even as a captive. So impressive that they gave him a whole section of the city to live in with his whole entourage of 200 people. He's supposed to be a prisoner coming there to be executed, and they give him all this stuff because he was so courageous. And his daughter, Gladys, becomes Claudia, adopted by the emperor because she's so impressive. Of course, now she's standing probably 5'11", 5'12", which would be 6 foot. And all the Romans, they're about 5'4". So she was impressive that way too. And she was blonde, and she was like, I think she was probably close to about 17, 18. She was married already when she came to Rome. And she had this habit of painting. Occasionally she would paint these symbols on her skin, blue symbols, very stark blue symbols, on her skin as part of their tradition. And so she was quite a spectacle to see, but very noble woman. And her daughters were extremely noble and very courageous. I mean, these were women that, you know, Proverbs talks about more precious than a ruby. And Paul admires them. Yet somewhere along the line, somebody got the idea that, oh, let's oppress the women. The women aren't supposed to speak in the church and all this kind of stuff. And they got it partly from what Paul said. But we go through that. We have some shows on women and men and the distinctions and the similarities. Both are vessels of the Holy Spirit. Neither one of them should be exercising authority one over the other. But today in our society, it's pervasive that whole groups of society want to exercise the majority rules. The majority, you know, 51% of the people can take away the rights of the other 49. If you believe that, you set into motion a belief and an idea and laws that will bring you into bondage. If you believe you have the right to judge others and rule over others and exercise authority over others and take from others, you're going to be in bondage. That's it. That's all there is to it. And that's why Proverbs 15:17 says, better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. If you want to control others, rule over others, you will be ruled over. If you don't want to forgive others, you will not be forgiven. If you do not want to give to others and help them when they have real needs, you will not be given to. That is the law. It's already built into the system. You can't change it. I can't change it. You can try to change it, but lots of luck with that. The next verse says, the wrathful man stirreth up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeaseth strife. The man who is angry is the man who will be afraid. It's only a matter of time. It's only about the flip of the coin. In Leviticus 19:18, we see, thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. I love thy neighbor as thyself. This is way back in Leviticus. This is what Christ said. You know, and that's after Leviticus 19:17, where it says, thou shalt not hate thy brother, rule over thy brother in thy heart, or in reality, thou shalt in any wise rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. But we do. You know, and that word hate that we see in that text is also translated enemies and enemy and foes and hateful. shalt not make an enemy of thy brother. You're not supposed to be ruling over your brother. That's the spirit of Cain. But yet every system of government that is known under the United Nations, in all those nations, people rule over one another. They rule over each other. They force each other to provide them with benefits. I mean, European Union now, they see this nation's going under, this nation's going under. So some men sit in a room somewhere and say, okay, all the other people in all the other nations are going to have to bail these guys out. You're going to have to do it. It's not a matter of choice. You're not independent persons now in a society based on daily mutual consent. You've already consented. Now somebody else is going to rule over you. And you consented to let them rule over your neighbor thinking you were going to benefit. You were going to gain. Like Proverbs talks about. You wanted the benefits of these men who exercise authority. So now you go under that authority. And you can play little games like I'm going to stop them from exercising authority over me. And it might work. And you know, I don't begrudge you that opportunity. But if you really want to get down to the nitty-gritty of the problem, you're going to have to look a lot deeper and ask yourself, how did I get here? How did we get to this state? We don't even have a collective memory. You don't have an individual memory of what it used to be a free nation. And there used to be free nations around. There are none around anymore. The United States isn't free. Canada's not free. Australia's not free. These people are all subject. And they can make you have health care, and they can make you do this, and they can make you do that, and they can make you pay and contribute and sacrifice. They can make you they can take your sons. I mean, go read Samuel 8. Read it. I mean, go read Common Sense. It quotes the whole thing in Common Sense. Thomas Paine was quoting it. Quoting the Bible. Thomas Paine. I thought he was a political man. Why is he reading all the Bible? Because the Bible's about government and how you govern yourselves. Zechariah 8:17. And let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbor. And love no false oath. Of all these are things that I hate, saith the Lord. Imagine evil. You know, the word there, imagine, is devise, count, think. It's translated 22 times devise. Only 9 times is translated imagine. Cunning, course, through crafts of state that have made you merchandise, human resources, collateral for debt. And we explain all this in the free books that you can read online, but the point is, that's where you're at. Evil. They imagine to make you, I mean, the word evil there is translated mostly evil, but it's also translated 59 times wickedness, 25 times wicked, 21 times mischief. Through the mischiefs and crafts of state, they have brought you back into bondage. The dog has returned to the vomit and the pig to his mire, only it's worse than it was before. And now you're moving towards the devastation of your society, and you are all tied together. But where are those ties? Are they just in the covenants and contracts and constitutions that you made? We have another book on that, free, online. Or are you bound in your hearts because you've accepted a lie? You've accepted a lie. You've accepted that it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods and to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. I mean, after all, it's for a good cause. I mean, isn't it great to educate everybody in schools? You see, you've been sucked into an idea that has brought you, body and soul, into that idea, into that realm, where that's okay. That realm in the universe, in the veils of the universe, in the membranes of the universe, the realm that thinks that way, that's hell. Hell is empty, folks. All the demons are here. that's from Shakespeare, I think. The reality is you have been sucked into an idea of thinking that is right out of Satan himself. And in order to keep you there, they have to create religious philosophies to make you feel justified, make you feel good about the fact that you have entered the realm of hell and the ways of hell and the ways of Satan. They have to make you feel good about that, because otherwise you might wake up and get uncomfortable and say, oh my gosh, I repent. They don't want you repenting. So they'll say, okay, you just get dunked in water and say these magic words and you're saved, while you're still subject to the realm and thinking of hell. That it's okay to brutalize your neighbor as long as you're getting what you want. You see, they got you thinking that's okay. They tell you, nothing you got to do, just say these words, accept Jesus, and you're saved. This is a damnable heresy. This is right out of Satan's mouth. You can do all these things. You don't have to obey any rules. You don't have to change. You just have to believe this single idea, and surely you will not die. This is Satan himself, and it is coming out of the mouths of minister after minister after minister. That's saying you do not have to repent. You do not have to change. If you listen to the other shows that we just did on this, we go through the biblical quote after biblical quote to see what I'm talking about. And that's a lie. You do have to change. If you don't forgive, neither will you be forgiven. If you don't give, neither will you be given to. If you are not converted, which means to turn around and change, repent and be converted, you're not going to receive the grace of Christ. They tell you this. But the ministers aren't telling you. They're just saying, just believe. You have to change. And you cannot change of your own power. You can be changed. And Christ has opened the door whereby you can be changed. And explaining how that all works in the metaphysical, spiritual realm is not really important. It's just that you're going to have to be circumcised of the heart and let go of the ideas that have sucked you into bondage. Because you can't change the world and be set free. You have to change, and you will be spit out and become free. Unfortunately, you're going to be spit out in hard times, but hey, you can make it. Trust in God. Matthew 5:43. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But Jesus goes on after that and says, no, you got to love your enemy. And to tell you the truth, Moses said the same thing. He said, give drink to your enemy. That doesn't sound like hate. That sounds like being nice. Honor thy father and thy mother, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Matthew 19:19. He's giving you the rules. He's quoting the Ten Commandments. My gosh, doesn't Jesus know the law has been done away with? Well, I harp on this all the time, because over and over again, Paul is quoting the Ten Commandments. That law is not done away with. It's laws that say that you have to be this, that. It's the ritual laws that came from the Pharisees, who twisted the message of Moses so that they didn't even know Christ when he came. The reality is, you won't know Christ either, because you're not following Christ. You're following an image of Christ created by the modern church, who sat by and did not be the welfare of the people, and delivered you into the hands of the men who exercise authority but call themselves benefactors. This church that you see out here everywhere trying to make people feel good about the evil they are reaping and will be reaping is the prophet of evil. Now, I know that they have been deceived and they're under a strong delusion, and that everybody would have been deceived except by the grace of God, but you have to start repenting. You have to start taking a look at this. And this is not an easy message to bring to you. I mean, it's easy for me to say. Not so easy for you to do. Mark 12:31. And the second is like, he's telling you these rules, because 22:39 was saying, and then the second is like, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love God, but then love thy neighbor as thyself. In Mark 12:31, says the same thing. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There's none other commandment greater than these. And if you actually keep that commandment, how could you be forcing your neighbor to get health care, to forcing your neighbor to pay for your child's education, forcing your neighbor to take get vaccination shots, forcing? You are electing a government. Of course, now, you have the right to do this. Just like the people had the right to elect Saul, which was a rejection of God. But the fact is while you've been saying you accept Jesus, in reality, you're rejecting God. Because you're electing Sauls every day. Sauls and Rehoboams and Jeroboams, and that's what you're electing. To rule over you and over your neighbor. Because you think you will gain. You will not. You will lose. And first thing you lose, like I said at the beginning, you will lose your sight, your ability to see the truth. And you will accept a lie that it's okay to do that. And it's not. And it will bring you into greater and greater bondage and greater danger and devastation. And it has already. Millions have lost their homes, their life savings, and thousands have lost their children. And more they will lose. Their sons and daughters will run. The sons will, now actually they got the daughters running before the chariots as well. You have to turn around and take back your responsibilities to take care of yourself back in that society of mutual consent on a daily basis. And where do you do that? You should be doing that in your churches, in your congregations of people, in those clay altars of you coming together in free assembly, which is still legal in this country, free assembly. See, you can do this. And we show this, and we can't get it all in one program, but we show you step by step in Thy Kingdom Come and the Free Church Report, you know, which you can all read online. You'll love the Free Church Report. It has a picture of Lady Godiva on the front. I won't tell you any more, for those of you who didn't listen to the last show, just to see who's going to go online at hisholychurch.org and look up the Free Church Report. You can do a Google search up there in the right-hand corner. The little guy peering out, do a Google search and you get a copy in a PDF format and you get to see the picture of Lady Godiva on the front of the book, The Free Church Report. Unfortunately, it'll be disappointing for some of you, but I'm tricking you. But anyway, to get you to do something besides sit and listen to the radio, you have to actually put things, actions into motions, and you will screw up. That's okay. It's intent that sets the emotion, your life, towards righteousness. You can't be righteous. God can help you do the righteous thing, but you need that guidance. And this all comes in the spiritual realm. But I am talking to some of you in the spiritual realm, but most of you can't hear because you have those scales. You know, you've accepted this lie and things can't get through. You can't see that which is before you. It's as if you're in another world or realm or dimension, and you can't see into the dimension of righteousness. So therefore, you can't even see what righteousness is. Although some of you, because of the yearning in your hearts and in your soul, you're beginning to say, there is something else. Something I'm missing. You know, that splinter in your brain and in your heart that's saying, we should be doing something different. And a lot of people are out trying different things, but most of them fall way short because they're not looking as deep as they need to look. Luke 10:27, and he answering said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with thy whole heart and with all thy soul and with all thy strength and with all thy mind and thy neighbor as thyself. What does it mean to love God? Well, all of His creation. See, and you've shut your eyes to the fact that you should not be coveting your neighbor's goods. And the fact that that's way down at the end of the Ten Commandments does not make it any less important, any more than the Ninth and Tenth Amendment of the Constitution were not important to those who became constitutionalists. Because it was because you did not do what those Amendment said, that you are in the problem that you're in today. And the reason you did not do those things is because you closed your eye to the idea that you should not be coveting or trying to exercise authority one over the other. And you're doing it in your democracies. And you're trying to elect guys to do it. Now, I know that some of you have been trying to elect guys who don't want to do that. And I understand that. I'm not condemning anybody. I'm saying that we are being sucked into a way of thinking, which is also sucking us away from a way of thinking and acting that can actually set us free. And what will really set you free is if you set others free by loving them instead of forcing them and compelling them and ruling over them. And by taking back the responsibilities you gave men who want to exercise authority, start taking back the responsibilities to be those men, self-governing men yourselves. You don't go out and try to separate yourself from the system. You will be spit out, I tell you, if you do this right. What you do is try to separate your heart, circumcise your heart from that system. Stop trying to rule over others. And the first thing you'll see when people start gathering together is someone says, oh, we got to use these words. We got to say these words this way. And we got to take these holidays. And we got to use this calendar. And we got to, I can't even think of all the things they come up with. You know, we got to have this diet and all these things. Stop making rules for each other. Talk about it. Well, allow everybody to have mutual consent. Stick to the basics. Love your neighbor. Carry their weakness. Allow them that weakness. In James 2:8 it says, if you fulfill the royal law according to scriptures, thou shalt love thy neighbor. Royal law. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Ye do well. The royal law of love thy neighbor as thyself. Well, you have to. If you're all kings and priests, you have to give everybody the opportunity of being kings and priests. You come together with mutual consent alone. And that's why we've created the network where you can join congregations of record. You join an email group first or to get to meet people. And it's all based on local areas. And it's growing. I just saw two or three more people joining today. They're not yet in congregations of record, but we're having a big meeting coming up in couple of days. Usually every April we'll have a retreat in the Midwest, a spring retreat in Missouri, and we've already had a couple, and we're going to hopefully keep going there, and we'll start others in other places, but our fall retreat is out here. But there are a lot of people interacting already. We're not doing everything we need to do, but we're starting to turn around and move in the other direction. And the more people that we do it, the more monkeys we got out there in the water scrubbing that bitter fruit, standing there taking the cold and scrubbing that bitter fruit to turn things around, the more we'll begin to awaken and see. You have to see. By the light of your vision, you will spread that light to others. If you love others as yourself. This is why it's repeated. Galatians 5:14. For all the law is fulfilled in one word. Even in this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Romans. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. How many times do we have to see it? Romans 13:9. For this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in the saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So, you see all these things, this is the way it goes. That was from the guy who said the law is done away with, so he wasn't talking about that. But anyway, we'll finish this up again next time on Keys to the Kingdom. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.